Welcome to the Central Assembly Podcast. It's our prayer that this message is an encouragement and blessing to your life.
All right, thank you, Pastor Jim. So this is actually kind of round two for me to tell a story, because I tend to kind of just jump into stories. I'm a very big storyteller, but I didn't used to tell my personal story very often. See, what happened was one day I decided, you know what, I'm going to make a good friend somewhere. So this random dude asked me to lunch one day. And first, maybe like the second or third conversation we have, we're having lunch. And he asks me a simple enough question. You know, we're at a restaurant, there's sports games going around, food's in front of us, we're ready to go. And he asks me a simple enough question. He's like, so do you like football? And I'm thinking in my head, man, I have to explain this every single time. So I'm telling him, you know, like, I don't watch football because my family is this, this, this. And then I start getting into my family, like, and then my mom and my dad, this is how they met. And then I get into, like, my family history. And then there's my brothers, you know, my sister, they're great. We're all from Chicago. And then I get into all of my school time. I'm like, and then in school, I was like this. In middle school, I was like this. In high school, I was like this. In college. And then I start getting into, like, what I was going through. I'm like, man, I'm just really feeling this and this and this and this. And probably 15 minutes goes by, you know, and he has the most serious face on. He looks at me after I finish. Now, I'm feeling good. I had my whole story there. I had checked all the boxes. I'm good to go. And he looks at me straight face, and he's like, so you don't like football, huh? So sure enough, I gave this random dude, this new guy, this whole spiel, and he will remain nameless. I'm sorry, Pastor Anthony. That is how me and that guy became friends. So I am a big fan of coffee houses. You know, I'm a big fan of kind of sitting across a table and looking somebody in the eye and saying, I am here. So I'm going to kind of approach this whole thing kind of like we're in a coffee house. We're talking for the first time, and you ask me the simple question. You know, you don't ask me, do you like football? You know, because apparently we all know where that's going to go. I'm going to go give you the same exact spiel as this question. Tell me about your life. And so this is how I would begin. See, I was born in Chicago. I was born to two Mexican immigrants, which is actually where the story starts. My parents are both from Mexico. My mom from Zacatecas. My dad from Mexico City. And they both came here pretty young with their families. One day, while they're in their 20s, they go to an immigration office. And my dad spots my mom in the line. And he's like, yeah. So he steps out of the line, and he's staring at my mom, and this is how my mom tells it. Yeah, and then your dad was just really creepy. He stepped out of the line to look at me, and I was like, who is this creep? I mean, he's a cute creep, but he's a creep. So they go through the line, she sits down, and the only seat open is the one right next to her when my dad gets out of the line. And so he sits next to her. And they start talking, you know, in Spanish. They're going back and forth. And then someone comes out of the office, and they're like, does anybody speak English? We don't speak English. We need some help with this translation. And my mom and my dad both raise their hands. And all of a sudden, like, those hand raises, apparently there was some chemistry. Because after that, they had a really romantic date at McDonald's. And my mom went back home and said, that's the man I'm going to marry. So a short year later, they end up getting married. And about a month after that, I'm born. So I wasn't raised in a Christian household. I was actually raised in a non-practicing Catholic household. So we went during Christmas, we went during Easter, and then we said we were Catholic every other Sunday, but kind of slept in. And so that's kind of how I live my life. My family, I am the oldest of five. So there's me, there's my brother Sebastian, there's my sister Anissa, there's my brother Emilio, and then there's my youngest brother Oscar. And so this is our story. See, when I was born, there's two big things that people notice right away. One, I was born 2 months premature. Now, that might not sound like much, but in the early 90s, it was pretty dangerous. So much so that they called the priest, because they were worried that I wasn't going to make it. I was the firstborn of my family, and my mom was so worried, because here I was, her firstborn son, possibly not going to make it. So they end up calling the priest, and everybody's praying, and they're worried. Now, sure enough, I'm here. So It was a good ending. But there was another thing that people would notice right away, and that was the lightness of my skin. The rest of my family was very, very dark. But here I was, very, very light. Now, in respect to the rest of my family, my brother is a very, very dark-skinned person. Born full head of hair, he is charming as all get out. He is athletic, he's smart, he's a good guy, you know. Then there's my sister, who's like a mix of both of us in looks. There's my brother Emilio, who was born with two bottom teeth. And there's my youngest brother, who's 15 years apart from me. So we're a very, very diverse family. And so growing up, we had a lot of fun. You know, me and my brother would fight all the time. Because why not? You know, that's what boys do. We wrestle. We punch each other. We kick each other. We make fun of each other. We scratch each other's cheeks off. It's great. And so we had a good time. And being a part of the Mexican household was extremely fun as well. Because family is the most important thing. We would see our cousins multiple times a week. If not, we saw them at least once a week at a family party. To me, my cousins were like my siblings. They knew everything about us. We'd play in the backyard. We'd play tag. Growing up in Chicago was awesome because, you know, you never knew what was going to happen. One day, there was this car accident on this major street that we lived on. And while my parents are helping this guy get out of this car in the car accident, me and my cousins are playing freeze tag because we have no clue what's going on. And so it just created this big familial atmosphere. In the Mexican culture, family is the most important thing, as it is with most people, but almost codependent. We count on each other so much. We're over-involved so much. We love hard, we punish harder. You know, it was one of those things where my mom would say, I love you, while at the same time having something in her hand to hit me with because I did something wrong. You know, she's like, hey, Christian, what'd you do? It's like, nothing. And she's like, did you break that cup? And I'm like, no. She's like, are you lying to me? And you know, my mom, she knew I was lying to her. And she's like, you know, I love you, right? And I'd be booking it because I knew what was going to happen next. And she'd throw the thing, and I promise you, it was like a homing beacon. And it hit me. So we loved so hard. So that's why it hurt. When here's this family who hung out so much, and I was constantly known as the different one. The first thing that people noticed was that my skin was light. And so the first thing that they made fun of was how white I was. Growing up, I'd hear it all the time. Oh, Christian, you're never going to have to deal with anything that we deal with because of how white your skin is. Oh, Christian, you're not Mexican, you're white. Oh, Christian, you're going to be able to go anywhere where you want because you're white. And it was this constant joke that they didn't mean any harm. That was the thing. It was unintentional. It was one of those things where people were just like, "Hey, we're just laughing about something. It's a common thing." But they kept on saying it over and over and over again. And then I try to fight it. I'm like, no, I'm Mexican, I promise. Like, look it, I can say these three words in Spanish. I can't speak Spanish. I can say these three words in Spanish. I'm Mexican, I promise. And I try to fight it and fight it and fight it. But it was just a common joke. Christian, yeah, you're so white. It's whatever, you're good. And so eventually I just stopped. But the thing is that became the foundation of everything else that happened. By that one joke, it gave everyone else the permission to kind of push me around. I was different. I wasn't the same as the rest of them. See, where everybody else in my family, all of the cousins, would play sports, I try, and I wasn't good at them. Where the rest of my cousins were dark-skinned, I was light-skinned. I would sing because it was the only thing I could do at the time, and they called me annoying. I wore glasses, so they called me four eyes. I had a little chunk on me, so they called me fat. And so these things continue to pile on. And you know, I would try to fight it. I promise. Like, it was one of those things where I would say, please, please don't call me that. You know, it kind of hurts my feelings. But when a whole bunch of people are saying it, it doesn't matter. They're going to keep on poking fun. They're going to keep on going with it because it's funny. And so eventually I stopped. I became a hassle. Or at least that's how I felt. See, because what ended up happening was when I tried to play sports with my family, they would sigh. Ah, man, Christian's going to be on our team. We're totally going to lose. When I tried to hang out with my family, I was a huge crybaby. And so they'd be like, oh, he's a crybaby. We don't want him to stick around. Now, the thing is like a lot of us are thinking in our heads, man, it just sounds like a normal thing you tell kids. It sounds like it's just a funny thing, you know, you keep on going. But on the receiving end of that, when all of these little things add up, it doesn't feel so little anymore. I was constantly fighting for my existence in my family, to find my purpose, to find where I belonged. But it was a constant reminder that I was different. And so in response to all of that, I would try to be different. And they'd backfire on me. I'd say, you know what? Since the rest of my family is listening to hip-hop and reggaeton and all this Mexican stuff, I'm going to listen to some rock. While the rest of my family is dressing in like these baggy clothes, you know, pants halfway down their legs, I'm going to dress in clothes that fit. Who would have thought? It would have been great. And, you know, since my family's not going to like want to hang out with me, since they kind of avoid me, I'm going to go make some friends who accept me. But then they'd make fun of me because of the way I dressed. But then they'd make fun of me because I listened to white people music. But then they'd make fun of me because I wasn't spending enough time with family. We hung out every single week. Sometimes multiple times a week. We would do things every single week. And I was never good enough. So eventually I just stopped. I was tired. I didn't want to fight anymore. So I decided from then on, with my family, I'd be quiet. And in school, I'll be whatever they want me to be. And I learned to adapt. In school, I could be anybody I wanted to be. I could be the popular guy to one group. I can pretend like I know what's going on in sports in another group. I can be the drama guy over here. I can be the choir guy over here. It was so easy for me to adapt to every situation. Because I always told myself, who I really am isn't good enough. So I'm going to be who everybody sees as good enough. And so I hid. I became that funny guy. I became that popular guy. But because of who I was, because of the shell I created around me, I never wanted to become close to anyone. People would ask, hey, dude, let's hang out outside after school. Like, let's hang out. Let's play some video games. No, I'm busy. I'm really busy. I can't. Hey, man, you know, like, if you want, I can pick you up and we can ride together to school. No, I'll just ride the bus. It's okay. I'm good. Because everything inside of me said that if they got to know the real me, they would leave me just like everybody else did. If they got to know the real me, then they wouldn't want to be my friend. And I'd have to deal with that rejection all over again. If they got to know the real me. And I kept on telling myself, I, as I am, am not good enough. And this continued to build and build and build. When you keep on telling yourself you're not good enough, eventually you start to believe it. And you begin to think, I'm tired. I don't want to act like somebody I'm not anymore. I'm done being alone. I'm done with not belonging. I'm done. And it hurts. And that word rings in your head. I am alone. And man, did that thought haunt me. But things changed. See, over the course of this time, right around when I hit high school, my dad finds the Lord. See, what ended up happening was that my aunt and my uncle were on the verge of divorce. And so their friends said, hey, you should come check out our church. I know that things are rough between you guys right now, but you should just come check it out. Just see if something can help. So my aunt and my uncle, not wanting to be alone in this grand scheme, decide to ask my mom and my dad to join them. My dad, hearing the message. Now, my dad was a very different guy back then. Drank, smoke. I've never seen so many pictures of naked women in my life. That kind of guy. He was different. He was tough. He didn't show his emotions very often. He would leave all the time. And so he's hearing this preacher speak. And he's getting mad because he thinks that my mom told the preacher everything that's going on in his life. So he goes home, you know, and he's talking to my mom. My mom's like, Pedro, listen, I didn't say anything. And he's like, I don't believe you. I don't get it. So, you know, most people would probably not go back to church the next week, but he ends up going back to see if, like, my mom was telling the truth. And what happens? The same exact thing. God reaches into his heart in such a radical way. And he accepts the Lord right then and there. And there was a dramatic change almost overnight. He stopped drinking. He stopped smoking. He got rid of all the pictures. He became the most loving guy in the whole wide world. At first, I didn't believe it. I was like, this is just going to change back to the way my dad always is. I'm not going to believe this. So when he got saved, our family took on the Christian title, but none of us went to church but my dad. So we end up moving to the suburbs. And my dad's best friend is there. He's trying to find a good church to get plugged into. And he finds this church plant in Plainfield, Illinois. And it's there that I meet my dad's best friend's son, Ricky. Now, we're babysitting at the time. We're babysitting these kids, me and him. And here he is talking to me. And I kid you not, I'm going to be straight up honest with you with what he was doing. He was trying to sell me porn. And I'm like, we're watching kids, man. Like, what are you trying to do here? Like, what do you expect? Like, no. And so, like, I say, I'm not going to hang out with you. So for one whole year, I don't talk to the guy. Because the dude is weird. Now, one day, about a year later, after my freshman year, the youth pastor at the church, I decided one random day to go to church with my dad. And the youth pastor at my church invites me to this event. And he says, Christian, come on along. Like, you're going to have a good time. This will be good. So I say, okay, what could it hurt? So I end up going with him. And he reintroduces me to Ricky a year later. And the dude is like, man, over the course of this year, I just really learned who God was. And I was like, what? So he invites me to hang out with his crew, and I'm like, okay, I guess I'll come hang out with you guys. And then all of a sudden, I realized something. That I was kind of fitting in. That a little piece of me was kind of showing here. And so we do this event. It was so much fun. It was so good. And so the next thing Ricky says is, hey, you want to come to church camp? I was like, no, that sounds really weird. You know, like, I've heard all the rumors about band camp. I don't want to go to church camp. And so he's like, don't worry, man. Like, I'll pay for you. It's going to be good. It's going to be great. I'm like, okay, all right, sounds good. So I ended up going to a church camp. And it was so much fun. You know, it was one of those things where I go and I'm like, I didn't know there were so many games. I didn't know you could buy so much candy. I didn't know that, like, there were so many pretty girls in the world. It was like all these things at once. I'm like, whoa, look at this entire world in front of me. And so then we get to the sermon, and I'm like, this, I don't care about this. Like, what's this going to do for me? So we get through the entire sermon, and he's talking about the love of Jesus Christ. He's talking about how it can change your life. And I've heard this spiel over and over and over again. My dad tells it to me every single week. And so I just blank. I don't need to hear this. Until the speaker says, I've got this story for you guys. So he pulls out this kid's story. And I'm thinking to myself, man, I'm too mature for this. I don't need this. I'm a 15-year-old kid. Like, what is this going to do for my life? And he says, this is a book called You Are Special by Max Lucado. And I was like, you're special. That sounds so basic. I don't care about it. Whatever. But in this book is this town of puppets called Wemex. And then there's a specific puppet called Punchinello. In this society of puppets, they do everything by gray dots and gold stars. And Punchinello is known for all the gray dots he has. See, you got a gray dot whenever you did something wrong. Whenever you were the ugly puppet. Whenever you tried something and failed. And you get a gold star for the good things. If you were the most beautiful singer, if you were an attractive puppet, if you were well-known, if you were popular. Some puppets had a mixture of gray dots and gold stars. Some of them had a plethora of gold stars. And then there's Punchinello, who is full of gray dots. And so Punchinello, wanting to change things, would try to jump as far as he could. But he'd fall short. He'd trip. And you get another gray dot. And then it hit me. I would try so hard to fit in. But every time I tried, I failed. And all of a sudden, I felt a gray dot on my skin. You know, because he was an ugly puppet, he would get more and more gray dots. And my family would make fun of me because of my four eyes, because I was a chunk, because I didn't fit in. Because he had so many gray dots, they just give him more gray dots. And I kept on getting made fun of. And because I was just the constant joke, people would continue to make fun of me. And I sat there. Inside, my heart is pounding. And the true me is finally feeling something. What if I am him? So all of a sudden, he meets this puppet, Lucia, who has no stickers on her whatsoever. They would try to put a gray dot on her, and it'd just fall off. So thinking that she was amazing because she couldn't have any stickers on her, they put a gold star on her because, man, she's so great. And it would just fall off. And so he was so confused. Why is it that these stickers won't stick? So she says, it's because
I've got someone you've got to meet. His name is Eli. He's the creator. So they go to meet this creator, and the creator picks him up and puts him on the table. And you know, Punchinello's asking questions like, why did you make me this way? And he said, I made you perfectly just the way you are. I love you just the way you are. And so he asks Punchinello to come back, and he says, okay, maybe. And he says, okay. But remembering that he created him just the way he is, that he was perfect just the way he is, as Punchinello was walking out, one gray dot falls from his body. And I thought to myself, could I let all of this go? Could I finally find a place where I belong? Where I feel whole? Where I feel like I have a purpose? And so I make my way to that altar, and I say, Jesus, I accept you into my heart. I take in everything. You're the only one I'm going to count on. You're the only one that I'm going to trust. Because I know you made me perfect and with a purpose. And then I felt whole for the first time. I felt warmth for the first time. I felt like I existed for the first time. So I go home, and I tell my family all about this. And I tell them all about the great thing that God has done. You know, my dad, he recognizes it, but he's busy working. The rest of my family kind of laughs it off because they're like, haha, we're not saved. We don't see what you're seeing. But my entire life changes. And all of a sudden, I stopped becoming this follower, and I started becoming this leader. All of a sudden, they start putting me in these positions of leadership, and I see this provision in my life. I see all of a sudden, I'm the president of my Christian club at high school. I'm the go-to student leader in my youth group. I become a motivational speaker for 2 years, and we travel the country doing different things. I go to New York for choir. I do all of these different things, and life seems good. I go to college, and they want me to become the class president. I'm like, okay, yeah, totally. And as I'm class president, they're saying, Christian, you got to be SGA president, Student Government Association. And I'm like, okay, sounds good. So they're like training me up. They're like, you're going to be this guy who runs CBC. It's going to be great. Then I become the sophomore class president. And my team burns out. And I burn out. And so I decide, you know what? I'm going to take this next year as a break. And so I meet with our VP, I talk to him, and I say, hey, I can't do student leadership again. I'm kind of just tired. He's like, okay, man. But here's the thing. Here's what I'm going to tell you. There's something I realize about you, Christian, is that you walk with confidence. But sometimes it feels like you're just hiding something. If you ever want to talk about it, I'm here. And then that's when I realized something. That I was in the exact same position I was in right before I accepted Christ into my heart. Except this time, I found my identity in the gold stars. I was a leader, I told myself. I'm too good to quit. Man, I am so great and mighty. I'm amazing. And I kept on living off of this high of leadership until it was stripped away from me. And then came my junior year, the hardest year. School was pretty easy. But I would come back from class every day, go to my room, close the door, sit in my bed, and just stare. I wasn't in leadership. I asked myself, who am I? And I didn't know. When I asked myself who exactly I'm close to, I realized no one. Just like how I did in high school, I put on this identity, something that would fit in, something that would make everybody else see me as good enough. And then that numb pain came back in my heart. I'm alone. Every day of junior year, I wondered to myself, am I meant to do this? Am I meant to be in ministry? Clearly, I'm not a good enough leader. Clearly, I'm not a good enough friend. Clearly, I've got nothing to hold on to. Every day, I'd go to my room, close the door, and stare. Every day, until I went home. Summer after my junior year is when everything changed. And it was one of those things where I came to realize something. That God sometimes works in those immediate moments. Those moments that we recognize and say, that's the moment that God changed my life. And there's times when God does things gradually. And we look back and we say, God changed me through this summer. Because what ended up happening was I ended up helping out at the youth group that I used to go to. I was a youth leader. Nobody asked me to do it. I did it myself. Nobody asked me to be this specific person to these kids. They just said, Christian, be you. No one asked me to go to coffee with them. No one asked me to hang out with them. No one asked me to start smiling a lot more. No one asked me to start telling jokes. No one asked me to kind of be myself. And it was then, right before I went back, that I realized God changed me. See, there was two moments in my life, well, one moment and one long span of time, where I know that God did something. The first was when I accepted him as my Lord and Savior. The second one was when I believed it. And for that summer, for the first time, I believed it. I knew I wasn't alone because the foundation of God was always there. I knew that he had made me for this specific reason, to be myself to those people, that he had crafted me perfectly to be this person to them. And I realized I could do it. I can be myself, and I can make it. Now, the thing is that I wish I could say that those moments of emptiness left, because they didn't. There are those days when that word creeps into my ear and then into my heart, alone. There are those days when I feel unlovable. There are those days when I feel like I've got nothing to give. But something's changed. And that's that I know that the foundation of God's love is always there. No matter what these lies in my head are telling me, God loves me. Even though these lies in my head are telling me I'm alone, God's right there with me. Even though all of these things are building up in my heart, crushing me, God is lifting me up. And so that is what keeps me moving forward. And so that is what I hope you take. In every season of life, no matter how hard it may get, God is always there. We are people of relationship. A lot of us feel alone sometimes, and that's okay, because God is there for you. Sometimes we feel like we've got nobody else to count on. But you've got God. And every moment, He is there as the foundation. And He is there, and He is good. Remember that. That's my story.